Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast, brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We've got a fair bit to get through this evening because all the rugby has started now, which is good. Not that we've been like trawling the depths trying to get content for the last few weeks, but it's kind of nice to have be in a position where we're going to struggle to get through everything tonight anyway. Joining me to dredge the depths of Scottish rugby this evening, we've got John Anderson. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Cam. Good evening, everyone that's listening live. And good evening to everyone who's downloaded this later in the week.
Yeah, and good evening, Craig. We've got Craig Manson with us as well. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, all. And just as John says, here we go.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you are, as both have said, if you are watching us live, please feel free to join in the comments, and we'll pick them up as we go along. We've got Dougie Lowe watching us. Good evening to Dougie. Yeah, chip in, and we'll pick up any comments that we catch our eye. So you can watch us live and then watch back on places like Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. You can also download the podcast afterwards as an audio download on Acast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can say, and this is going to not, because I know this works, Alexa, play Scottish Rugby Podcast. And I've just set up everyone's Alexa there, because I know that we've had complaints about me doing that in the past, but you'll have to do it. So yeah, you can listen to, catch us anywhere there's podcasts. You can also sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast for exclusive bonus weekly content now. So what we do this regular podcast now that we're doing now, where we cover the main bits of news, main talking points from the weekend's games. And then we try and keep that in between the 40-minute to a 1-hour mark. And then we say goodbye to our listeners who listen on the regular podcast. And we then do a separate little podcast where we get a little bit sweary, a little bit ranty. We do hands in the ruck and we have a little bit of chat about rugby related and other things that have just kind of got our goat that week, and it's lots of good fun. So patrons get that. So you can get that from £3 a month. You can pay £5 a month, and you get in the Dougie Donnelly members lounge, which means you get your name read out on the podcast. So we haven't had anybody sign up to the Dougie Donnelly members lounge this week, so I've got no names to read out, but thank you very much for those people who have signed up for the £3 a month. Hopefully you're enjoying the little wee extra podcast we're putting out. We are planning on doing some other stuff for Patreons in the coming weeks and months. There have been hiccups along the way outside of the podcast. I'm taking my youngest son for his second PCR test in 2 weeks tomorrow morning. So those are the kinds of things that get in the way of us being able to kind of put out some additional stuff as well. But that's by the by. We've got rugby to talk about. Shall we start off then with Scotland versus Spain? So this is the qualification for the Rugby World Cup 2021. Unbelievably, and I looked at the table for this because I was thinking Scotland have got Ireland on Saturday. And I thought, oh, I wonder, I'm really kind of kept up with how Ireland had done in the tournament, and found out that they lost their opening game to Spain. Scotland have now beaten Spain with a bonus try bonus point. I think Ireland beat Spain with a try bonus point.
Italy,
yeah. And yep. So everybody's beaten everybody with a try bonus point. So everybody's on 5 points on the league table going into this weekend. Having said that, Scotland, the points difference is quite difficult reading for Scotland. Scotland, the bottom in the pool, their points difference is minus 20. Then Spain, minus 4. Ireland are on plus 7 and Italy are on plus 17. So I can't. Is it that do either of you know? Because I was trying to figure this out, because the Rugby World Cup 2021 website is very scant on details. Is it the top team that automatically then qualifies for the World Cup? Do we know? Or is it the top two? Because I know that there's still the repechage. It's a lovely word to go after this. So this isn't fatal for Scotland's qualification chances if they don't qualify. But is it?
I'm aware that from what the press have been talking about and what I've looked at, and John is scrolling away there at the moment, so he may correct me. But I would reckon I'm under the impression if Scotland beat Ireland this weekend, they qualify. So, you know, that's what I've been told. But I, you know, I.
That's always that, googling going. Yeah, he's so focused on that research. He can't even speak while he types. Can't do two things at once.
No, that's no. There's no multitasking here. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, as far as we know, which is not very much in this case, a win will secure Scotland the place at the World Cup. That's what we know. Yeah. A defeat could be.
Okay, so yes, let me have a look and see what we've got for Rugby World. As always, is here to help us. A big shout out to Alan Dimmock, formerly off the blog, who's the features editor on there. But they've got an informer, a little kind of like all you need to know about it. But it doesn't tell me, so it's not all I need to know about this, Alan Dimmock.
It's not the easiest thing, is it, to work out?
To work out, no. And also there's lots of adverts on here that keep popping up.
I've got them as well, yep. They're annoying.
Dougie Lowe is saying that the top team qualifies second, goes into repechage.
That seems to be what the all you need to know on Rugby World. So thank you very much, Dougie Lowe, for that. I think that looks to be the case.
Seems sensible as well, because if you compare it to other tournaments, it's the top qualifies, the second goes into the playoffs. So, I mean, kind of makes sense.
So we think that's what's happened. I think I was solely relying. I think I was thinking at this point, hopefully Scotland are doing well, because I thought they might do quite well in this tournament, and we're not having to worry too much about it. So we'll take each game as it comes. But given how tight things are, I've been forced to research this. And given COVID-related mishaps in this house this evening, I haven't had much chance to Google it. So there we go. So first goes through automatic qualification for the World Cup. Second place will go into the repechage, we believe.
It's Samoa and Colombia who've already come through qualifying.
Colombia. Well, there you go. So who knew? Who knew that Colombia women were...
The final qualification tournament, which is the repechage, as you've said, they will enter the Pool A. So the winner of the repechage will win Pool A, will compete in Pool A alongside New Zealand, Australia, and Wales. Ouch!
That sounds like a pool of death. Oof.
Do Wales still do women's? Women's rugby? Maybe we should save that for Hands in the Ruck later on.
Yeah. I think from what I can, well, we were just, we saw the, you probably saw the information on online about Jasmine Joyce and coming out of the GB7s are going to be finished at the end of this year, and she's going to have to go back to Wales to play, and she's no longer going to be a professional and going to have to find herself another job. And
unbelievable. When you say, if anybody's watched this, there was a highlight this weekend of the sevens, the Wales women's, and it was, I thought the clip was going to be that somebody had scored a length of the field try, because I just thought this looks like an interesting try, and you see the opposition player absolutely sprinting for the line for the life, and you're thinking, well, that's a length of the field try. That's the kind of clip that would go up on Twitter. And then Jazz Joyce comes from absolutely nowhere, manages to snag her before the line and turn around and then jackal the ball and get a turnover. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I was going to say, it's now the best defensive cover tackle since Chris Patterson against England in the World Cup in 2011. That was the benchmark of fullback cover tackles, and that has completely and utterly trumped it.
Yeah. Scott, I should just say, Scotland women are now in the top 10 of the world rankings after that win over Spain. So congratulations to them. Yep. I don't know where Colombia sit. That's interesting. Colombia are 26th in the world. And
I think it's because of the way the qualifying sort of thing works. That, you know, obviously you've got to have the opportunity for every area of the world to potentially qualify. So it's the old, you know, in the World Cup in football where you go into, I remember Ireland a few years have to like play against Iran or something like that, and you know, in like some sort of Australia and some sort of weird qualifier thing, or it was, you know, these sort of weird quirks happen. So, yeah,
Kazakhstan are currently 15th in the world. in women's rugby. There's some interesting women's rugby facts for you. Anyway, we're here to talk about Scotland women versus Spain. Anyway, we'll do belters and bams. So this is our new way of kind of going through games that we've watched, particularly the big international games. Belters are for the things that we thought were good. Bams are things that maybe didn't go so well. Craig, what's your belters for that game?
I've got a couple, but I'll start off with Helen Nelson. Not only can she score a lovely try, but what a kicker. She's got a nudge on her. To score the points that she did, obviously a big part of the winning scoreline. And she deserves all the praise that's been heaped on her. She's done a great job.
Yeah. No, I thought she was fantastic. The some of the passes were just absolutely superb. Really quick, really well floated. Was it she? I think she got that. Was her pass to? Was it her pass? No, it was Smith's pass to.
Megan Gaffney.
Rona Lloyd for the Rona Lloyd try.
Right. Yeah. But no, I just one of the one of the things thrown at women's rugby quite a lot, or the mud that is thrown at women's rugby a lot, is the passing can be ponderous. And it was great to see that being turned on its head. I really do believe that people should be watching a lot more women's rugby, because women's rugby is coming through so much, and just interesting games as well. And there's no I can't say the word because I'm not in the Patreon, but there's no rubbish going on. There's no messing around. It's proper scrums.
Proper scrums.
Yeah.
Easy. I think people are looking for... Go ahead.
They're not so reliant on the physical aspect of the game, so you actually see the skills coming through. You know, we've all probably known players through the years who've kind of tried to come up through the age grades but don't actually have much in the way of skill. They're just a bruiser. You don't get that so much in women's rugby. You get people who can actually play rugby. It's great.
Yep.
Absolutely.
John, your belter?
So I've got a bit of a combo, belter and bam. It's a wee bit of a combo. So initially, the bam part of it was... the way Scotland initially got beaten up front quite early on. They were really under the cosh. You know, Spain took it to them up front, and they caused them a lot of problems, which was worrying to see, because it's something that has at times crept into Scotland's game in the past. The belter, however, is the way they bounce back from that, and absolutely, like, they obviously they got a rolling mall try right at the end as well, and you know the way they've kind of steadied the ship, they've then taken it to Spain themselves, and it was almost, I was watching the game, and it was almost like, you know, you sometimes see things and you go, right, well, they've got forward dominance, they're going to run away with this, and then you see the other side win a mall or win a scrum, and you're like, wait a second, is it just that nobody can defend them and they can just all attack them? Is that how it's going? So I thought the reaction from that, because you know when you're under that sort of pressure on the forwards, heads can go down very quickly because you're going to be struggling. But I thought absolute credit to them, they stuck at it.
I think we saw signs of that last week though, didn't we? Because as much as the Italy game, the scoreline looked like it was a walkover, it absolutely, the game itself, the tries were kind of well taken opportunities by Italy, and as a result of poor defending by Scotland, but you couldn't question the Scotland players' desire and commitment to the way that they played right up until the last minute, where, you know, and then, you know, they got the last minute try, and I think that paid off this week because they tightened things up. So when you've got that commitment in a tight game and your heads aren't going dropping, that's a good thing. So they didn't let the heads drop against Italy, and nobody would have blamed them, I don't think, given the way the score was going, if they had done. And I think that's what's seen them through into this game, because when you're in a tight game and you've got that mentality of, we're not going to let our heads drop, even if we feel like we're under that pressure, And God, we've seen, how many times have we seen Scotland men's team or Edinburgh, Glasgow crumble under similar pressure? But
yeah,
I don't think that's the case with the Scotland women's team. Is they really seem to have never say die, never let your head drop, even if you're getting it on the end of it, an absolute drubbing, they'll play till the end, and that repays itself when you're in games like this.
We've seen it actually for, if we think back quite a few years now, we have seen that. You know, obviously we've given very recent examples there, but my mind immediately kind of jumped back to the England game a few years ago where, you know, Scotland, they stuck at it. They were against a, you know, we've talked about this in the past, England are a fully professional team. You know, they were World Cup champions at the time. It's a massive ask, but Scotland gave them a fright and gave them a scare. Yes, it was for 20 minutes, but they then stuck at it for the rest of the game. And yes, they were overpowered by a better team, but we saw that. And I remember us talking on the pod after it actually and being like, well, that was the most heartening thing. It was like they fair stuck at it. And I think that's a trait of the side. And credit goes to everyone within the squad that's kind of promoting that attitude. But, you know, obviously the leadership have to kind of drive that as well. And, you know, it's just amazing credit to everyone involved.
I wonder whether or not, because they've talked a lot about this mentality of looking for the small wins within a game. And sometimes I think with game where they're playing opposition like England, and you know that you're up against professionals, and really you're going into a game knowing that you're on a hiding to nothing. But if you're trying to find the small wins within a game, then when it comes to the games that you can win and are winnable, then that sees you through, because you're not. I think we've seen certainly other Scottish teams in the past focused on the result, and that, you know, that's a dangerous thing to be. If you're focused on the result, then everything goes to pot. If you're focused on the incremental wins, on the let's get the next line out, let's make that next tackle, that builds to something more than we need to. This is a must-win game. I've got to make sure the next thing I do counts. It's just I'm going to make my next tackle, I'm going to make the next line out. And they've talked about that before. That's what they aim for, and it seems to be working, Craig.
Yeah, very much so. You know, you've got to look at you know, that extra, what's that extra 1% you can do in this game, and just work on that. But, you know, there's a lot of people out, you know, I can hear them already, people out there saying, because it's only Spain. Because we are naturally thinking of the men's game and thinking of Spain's men's game, we automatically go, oh, it's only Spain. You have to remember that Spain women are a very, very decent outfit, and are well thought of within the women's rugby circle. So,
Scotland have been on the end of some pretty heavy defeats from Spain in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and that's for those that don't know women's rugby very well. That's where we're getting these fantastic games, because we're seeing other rugby powers coming into the World Cup, whereas you don't normally associate with rugby, which is a fantastic thing as well.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is you've got the gap. I think is closing from kind of five downwards, 5 to 10. The gap's closing. I think you'll always have your England's, your New Zealand's. Yeah. And Canada and France are always going to be the big teams in women's rugby, because they're well-funded outfits. I mean, there's all sorts of issues with the way women's rugby's been run.
Yeah.
But those have always been the big four. But certainly Scotland are closing the gap on countries like Spain and even Ireland and Wales. Mm. So these results have been coming and building to them, and it's great to see them kind of finally happen.
I'm excited for the weekend. I think this Ireland game is going to be a really interesting thing. Yeah. Going to be a really, really interesting.
I think the BAM for me is that I kind of agree. It goes with what John was saying. Really, I could still see some moments of kind of lapses in defence. Mm. And I think that's what needs to be tightened up on. The attack, I mean, I think anybody who's watched Scotland women in the last few years would say that Scotland women haven't really got a problem with their attack necessarily. You know, they've got some phenomenal players there. They all seem to play for one another, and they all seem to understand what each other's doing. It's just marrying that to the defence. That's the next step for them. And there were still moments where there was a couple, you know, that first Spain try was quite soft. There were people slipping off tackles again.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we know that, you know, Spain are a very good women, a good side when it comes to women's rugby. I thought Hannah Smith, I thought she had a really good game. I think I really like her and Lisa Thompson as a centre partnership. I think that's always worked really well. And then Jenny Maxwell at the scrum half. I know Mary McDonald did played a lot of rugby last year for Scotland 9, and we talked on the podcast, I think, about kind of her passing technique and maybe some of the slow delivery. And, you know, it's made a difference, I would say, having Jenny Maxwell at 9. Certainly the speed of ball that's coming off the base of the scrum and the base of the rucks is significantly changed. And that's not to say that, you know, it's Mary McDonald will get better. She's very young. She's a new player. She was kind of thrown in the deep end. I mean, God, she played in that win against France, so she can't be doing that badly. But there's a noticeable difference, I think, when Jenny Maxwell's playing. And, you know, Mary McDonald's got a lot to like about her game, but Jenny Maxwell, I think, has helped Scotland with that speed of delivery, and that helps with the attack.
That's been the issue. We've always been incredibly strong in the forwards, but we have been slightly slower and delivery of the passes or the accuracy of the passes, some of the kicking as well, not kicking at goal, but ball and hand kicking. So for me, it's great to see the ball being used and used really, really well.
Yeah. Any more belters and bams from the game for either of you? You want to mention before we move on?
No, I've got no bams at all. I was pleased with what was going on.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess the only bam is it's Ireland, isn't it? And we know how these crunch games in any Scottish rugby goes with when we play Ireland. So I really hope we don't fall in the classic trap of just building ourselves up and getting excited and then getting ground to death by them.
I think the difference, though, is that within the first 10 minutes of Scotland men playing Ireland, if things weren't going their way, you can see how the rest of that game's going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with Scotland women because they'll play to the end,
yep,
regardless of what's happening. I think if they've clearly worked on the defence because they tightened up after that first Spain try, you could see they tightened up. If they can do that from the kickoff, it's going to be a very close and tight game.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think also, as we've just been talking about with the attack, I think we can hopefully open up holes with Ireland and get through them. I think Ireland have got their hands full this weekend.
Yeah. We should just have a standing item that Jade Conkle's amazing. But I think that's just a standing item. We've not 100%. Mentioned it, but it's a standing item.
I don't think any of us wanted to mention it because we're going to talk about this and other stuff, and it's like, you know, Jade Conkle is the most obvious thing to say, that oh, she was amazing again.
I didn't want anyone sat there going, they've not mentioned Jade Conkle. I was like,
it's usually me that's mentioned it. You know, Jade's just brilliant. Just
strength and contact. Just that, boom, that's ball out. Oof.
That kind of the setup for the, was it the, I can't remember which try it was, where she just kind of spun round and fed the ball back, which is, oh, woof.
Absolutely.
Anyway, phenomenal. So that's the Scotland v Spain game. We wish them best luck against Ireland at the weekend. We'll cover that next week on the podcast. We'll do pick of the six next. I've got a few weeks left to get the bloody jingle sorted for this. Good news, jingle fans. I've bought a MIDI keyboard with a drum machine. Just when you thought they'd drop the jingles, he buys himself a keyboard and a drum machine. So hopefully I'm hoping to do some sort of crazy remix of Blankety Blank theme tune. So just imagine that with Pick of the Six over the top. So yeah.
Just for the last couple of games of the game.
That's it. Ready for the fight. For the fight. Ready for the final. So yeah, pick of the six then. Crikey, Moses! What a weekend that was for Super Six. It really, I mean, you know, we've talked, and it's been lovely to see this tournament kind of develop in front of our eyes, because it is. This feels new, because I think that it's not being used in the way it was set up to be used, because COVID's changed that. You've got players who've dropped down from professional level who are stepping up and playing really well. You've got guys, I mean, not so much now, because I think a lot of the players have returned to the pro teams, I think, for pre-season. But just the standard of the rugby on show, and I think the entertainment value as well, you can't follow. It's a bit like you were saying before, Craig, with the with Scotland versus Spain and Scotland women. If you're the kind of person that doesn't enjoy modern professional rugby or international rugby and thinks it's just kick tennis and you can't get into it, go and watch the Super Six, because that's the rugby you're after. It does exist. It is out there, the rugby that you want. And it's bloody entertaining to watch. I mean, it's Bulls versus Southern Knights for the final for me. I don't see it going any other way.
Yeah, two very contrasting styles though as well. Like the Southern Knights, I mean, if you want a pick of the six, Christ, they can maul, can't they? My goodness, that the final rolling maul try they scored, where I think it was, it ended up being a penalty try they got given.
Yeah,
and it was.
I felt bad for the lad who actually scored it though.
He scored it. You're like, come on,
just give him it.
Absolutely, but. I mean, that is, if we were to look at that, that is man-shaming territory, how fast that is moving. They are destructive up front. And then on the other side, you've got Ayr, who play some very nice stuff. They're strong in the forwards as well, but they play some lovely stuff in the back. So
yeah, some of the offloading from Ayr this weekend was absolutely beautiful.
And then the next level to that was Stirling County with the offloading.
That's my pick in the six is Stirling County coming back at the end there, and that was a fabulous moment for them. But again, it's should Boroughmuir have got so many points against them? Defence has been a bit kind of.
Well, we said early on, didn't we? We said with Stirling. Stirling were kind of our pick of the top three. We said, looking at Bulls, well, maybe top four. I think we said Bulls, Knights, Watsonians were going to be the top three. Yep. Stirling were there or thereabouts, and then Boroughmuir and Heriot's bottom from the first couple of rounds. But, I mean, you're right, Craig. It's not, should Stirling have they've got everything there that they needed to have, but they've got all the notes, but not necessarily in the right order. We're still
They're playing punk rock right now. They're not really. They're just playing lots of really loud notes, and they're not really sure what song it's going to make. But it's just going to be fun.
It'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see them next season. Well, first of all, the knee, if they're going to play open rugby like they're playing, knee cut their grass a bit more because it's far too long. but on the other side of things, there was some fantastic offloading, some fantastic passes, but also.
Aye, but who's at inside centre? I mean, that's just hereditary.
Yes.
Archie very Russell, true. Finn's brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
Couple of out the back offloads and all sorts. You're like, oh, Archie, come on. And he quite looks at an angle. He looks like Finn as well, and it is a bit like. What's going on here?
I've forgotten the guy's name, but I think he's Irish and he's their fullback. Anyway, it's gone out. He's got a nice moustache anyway, and he's really come across. He's been quietly just performing, and I think he scored on the weekend, and he's quite an impressive player. So I think if they keep going, if they can get their defence sorted out, they've got a good chance next season.
I think Boroughmuir, for me, are in that category, but I think aside from Klimbereto, who plays the scrum half, I really like him. We said before, I really like him. I think they've got some good forwards. They just don't seem to. Everything else about them just feels a little bit meh and a little bit club, and that's not down. They just they need the players that they have outside of. They've got a couple of exceptional players, and that's what's dragging them through.
Yeah,
and everybody else. And I think this is probably. I think it's a kind of pandemic situation that the players that they have got might have the skills but haven't been able to get up to that standard, or they're having to plug a few gaps for guys that might play Premiership level but can't make up. And whatever you say, it is, you can see that is a massive step up from Premiership now to Super Six. But they have spells where they play really well and they play some lovely rugby, and the forwards can have dominance and they've got a few good players, but they don't. It's fits and spurts, and it doesn't feel particularly cohesive at times.
I kind of put it together. I put it like it's almost as if they've got themselves a brand new Lamborghini, and they're one of those guys that takes it out in the road and on YouTube and plants it in a lamppost the first time he dumps a clutch. It's one of those situations where they've got some fantastic facilities, they've got some fantastic players, they just can't put it together at the moment. And every time they try to put it together, something goes wrong. And it's a real shame for them, because I think they've got all those things. Well, maybe it's not a shame. Maybe you need to look at the coaches, I don't know. But I think, just as you say, COVID, et cetera, has kind of come along and just put a spoke in their wheels, you know?
Yeah.
We've also got the worst strip in the Super Six, so that might be
no, no, no. Stirling Counties is worse than Boroughmuir.
No, I'm not having that. The colours in Boroughmuir is dreadful.
Tartan on shorts is just a no for me, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, I agree, but I think the Boroughmuir. I was watching it earlier on, and I was like, I was probably on fashion watch a wee bit, and you know what?
The test for me of a good shirt is, does it look good with jeans, right? Because you take it out of the context of rugby, of guys on the pitch playing rugby, would that look good with a pair of jeans on a Saturday in a pub?
So what you're saying is we need the Super Six teams to send us all a shirt, and we'll model them on our Patreon special.
That's it. I think not even a Patreon special. We'll do this on the pub. Hey, if any of the Super Six teams are watching, you want us to wear some Super Six shirts, send them our way. We'll rate them. We'll do We'll happily rate Super Six shirts.
That's fantastic. Yes.
I'll tell you what, I would love some. I'd be up for some Southern Knights merch.
My, Cammy, you get me the right way.
These Southern Knights, my, they do turn their heads.
No time.
And there you go. Any opportunity we had to get any merch has just gone. Thanks, boys. I was really looking forward to my Stirling County shirt, but what have you done?
Well, I think I already shot that in the foot by saying that their tartan shorts are absolutely honking. So,
I mean, yeah.
We've still got, hey, look, we've still got the Ayrshire Bulls. Look, your kits are nice. Look, it's black. You can't go wrong with it.
Big issue with the Ayrshire Bulls, right? And this is, I don't know if this is the place for this or if it's like extreme hands in the ruck or something, right? Robbie Nairn was wearing 19. What is that about? I'm not having this. I'm not happy. I was watching it and I was just like fizzing. Like, somebody just get my winger shirt. Just sort it out. It's just a mistake. Don't worry. Just change it.
Maybe
if you were
through the shirts and just found the only one that could fit
them. I know, but that's fine at like West 4 level.
I mean, it makes this the one thing that annoys me. I'm going to come on to that in a minute. We've got a couple of comments about shirts. So Magnus Peacock says, the Bears have the best kit and I'll hear no word against it.
I'm sorry.
Ayrshire Bulls have the best kit. Birmingham is not bad. I agree with you, Magnus. Thank you. Martin Bell says, any chance of Southern Knights moving to red and white hoops at all? Who knows? We'll put that in a suggestion box. This is a daft thing about rugby. This is a side issue, and maybe again, this is a hands in the ruck issue. But the insistence on rugby of doing the 1 to 15 shots and not just giving everybody a bloody squad number, because that would just be easier, because then you have the wastage of having to get how many different sizes of three shirts to fit all your props, or different size twos to fit your hookers.
If you think about, actually, just thinking about Edinburgh for a wee minute, and this isn't a criticism, Craig, so just relax.
I'm just waiting.
I'm thinking about like a few seasons ago where you had Blair Kinghorn playing fullback, Darcy Graham playing fullback, and you probably had others playing fullback as well. And it's like, Darcy and Blair are very, very, I mean, that's opposite scales of the spectrum, isn't it? Like, they're definitely different body shapes. That must have been a pain. Like, and I know it's at pro level, it's fine, but you're right. Actually, even at this lower level, it's probably a bit stupid that we have to, you know, stick to the numbers.
What happens on a Thursday, right? Here's the thing. On a Thursday, Richard Cockerell phones up and says, I'm naming Blair at fly half. And I've never named it fly half before, but he's starting. This is what happened last season. Like, you got the kit man thinking, all our other fly halves are roughly the same size, so it's been no bother. But now I've got to go and find a shirt and iron on the number 10 to the back of it before Friday or Saturday kickoff. I mean, give him a squad number, it's fine. You recycle the same shirt until it runs in a puff.
Cammy, I'm sorry to say, no one is getting me. Well, actually, nobody can get me out of a three shirt usually because it's far too tight. but nobody's getting me out of a three shirt ever again. My lucky number is three, and three is my shirt, and that's the way.
Right, but that's it. You just have to fight for it, Craig. That's the start of the season. Throw everyone in a ring.
Because nobody's wearing the three shirt after me anyway, because it'll drain them.
You're sorted then. So that's your. I think you're onto something here, Cam. Let's start the campaign now. We are wanting squad numbers for rugby.
Squad numbers for numbers. If you want the three shirt, that's fine. You just have to fight for it pre-season with everybody else.
Was it not Leicester Tigers all those years ago when they used to sew the numbers on the number patches onto the back of the shirts?
We had letters for a centenary match of, between like Butte and another club, and there was letters on the shirt, and I was freaked out by this. This confused me very, very much. I'm like, not thrilled about this.
Yeah. See, it all goes back. The problem is it all goes back to like the first president of the SRU, I think, or one, the second one who was stood at a Calcutta Cup match, and the king turned to him and says, why do they not have shirt numbers on their back? And he said, because they're not cattle. So it's taken hundreds of years to get to the point where we'll even have shirt numbers, let alone squad numbers. So yeah.
Just think of the marketing opportunities though. Like if you were to, you know, obviously football has done this, and I've been shouted at in the past for saying we can learn stuff from football. But think of the marketing opportunities for the kind of world class players out there, the guys that are the Finn, Russell, FR10.
I'm going to put a pin in this because I've got views on this for our United Rugby Championship preview that we'll do in a minute.
Of course,
yeah. Bring up Martin Bell's comment. He says, is there any kind of SRU directive encouraging the Super Six clubs to adopt the Scottish way? It might partly explain why it's been very entertaining so far. I think there's they're probably encouraged to, but I don't think there's that level of. There is a club level, I know.
Yeah, we work through the Scottish blueprint, the blueprint is very much a create space, fast pace, moving game. And so, I guess if I would expect it going through, that it is all the way through, including the Super Six.
But if you're creating a competition from scratch, and again, I'm touching this when we talk about the URC in a minute, but. You want it to be entertaining, so that blueprint, the Scottish blueprint, is an entertaining blueprint. So if you're doing a new product and you're going to take it out to a market and say to people, here's new rugby, here's a new brand of rugby in Scotland, we want you to watch it. Nobody's going to watch a 3-0 slugfest in the mud on a Saturday night. It needs to be something that's going to draw in. It's going to draw in the people who watch, Edinburgh and Glasgow, who don't have a club, for example.
Yeah.
And it's going to draw in people who follow club rugby and Scotland but don't have an interest in pro rugby. You need to pull them in. And the way to do that is to create entertaining rugby. The one thing I think my kind of pick of the six this weekend. I think you saw a little bit with Southern Knights, and particularly with Ayr this weekend, is we finally got that ruthlessness that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
That kind of utter, and I think I was worried that maybe we were asking too much because I thought it might undermine the kind of entertainment value of the competition. But that those two games were entertaining, and it was just great to see two teams being utterly ruthless and saying, I mean, with Southern Knights, there was a lot of patience. They weren't getting the scores early on, but they were dominating the game, and then the score just came. It was disappointing they didn't get the bonus point try, I don't think. But then with Ayr, there was, you know, there was that kind of moment of scramble defence where they just completely, you know, turned it around, and to nil a team.
Yeah.
In modern rugby, the way that they did, it's just, I mean, it's unheard of, but that marrying that running rugby with also that defence ruthlessness was what we've been waiting to see. And I think when it's fine, when it was finally there, it wasn't as horrendous as I thought it might be. It wasn't as dull as I was worried it might be.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I think you, that's the whole thing though. I think if we're playing to the Scottish rugby blueprint as such, the teams that are switched on and say, yeah, we're going to play to that blueprint, but we're going to have a hard as nails pack doing the set piece. And it showed with the Southern Knights with their maul work. It showed with the Ayrshire Bulls. They are not afraid to go into contact, that's for sure. And I think that the ability to, just stupid little things like if it rains, to tighten it up a little bit, and you still have the flow in rugby, but you've got this ability to pick and go and to put the ball up the jumper and take it to them, and they've got that ability to do it. So yeah, it is. I just love the Southern Knights control. I really, that's why I've probably pinned my reset to them and say I'm going to go that way. I think they really have the control to hold the Ayrshire Bulls and then maybe take them out to dry at the last minute, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm struggling because I'm between, I love the way the Ayrshire Bulls play. I can't quite bring myself to love a team that plays in Melrose. I think that's the problem I've got. It's the old border rivalry. It's like, if they were representing the borders, I could probably just about kind of bring myself to say, do you know what? Here's a team that's representing the boys, but that's not the way they've gone with it.
I think, yeah, and they've also turned the Green Yards into a 4 or 5G pitch, and it's a bit kind of it's almost like it's awful.
We'll save that for Hands in the Rock. Anyway,
I think that might come up.
that's our pick of the six for this weekend, for this week. So there's still a couple more rounds to go until the finals. So again, if you haven't been watching, it's well worth catching. And if not, if you can't catch a game and then the highlights of the rest, is well worth watching.
Absolutely.
So the return of, well, it's not the return. I don't know what to call this. We've got a brand new competition. I think we need to kind of say this is year one. We've got a brand new competition now for professional rugby in Scotland. So we're part of now the United Rugby Championship, or the URC, not the Ultimate Rugby Championship. We finally got it right. The United Rugby Championship. Nearly did it.
The Ultimate United Fighting Rugby Championship.
Ultimate, yeah. Which for those that don't know, and I know some people that listen to this podcast because you may not have caught up with this, we've now got teams from South Africa, and it's not the piddly wee tiddler teams, it's the proper full former Super Rugby franchises playing in South Africa. Four of them. You've got the Irish provinces, got the Welsh teams, and the Irish and the Scottish clubs. It's the way the format works, and again, we've covered this on the podcast before. I've probably still got the video saved somewhere, but Scotland are the Scottish teams, Glasgow and Edinburgh, are in a pool with Bennett and Zebra. The Welsh teams are in a pool with each other. Irish teams are in a pool with each other. South African teams are within a pool within each other. I think you play everybody in your pool twice and everybody else once.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
And we end up with some sort of final table. Within that, there are many competitions. So you've got the 1872, obviously. Until today, I didn't know that the Scottish teams were playing for the Scottish-Italian Shield.
Yes. Oh. Yes. That's
how exciting.
So This was they played this card a few years ago when it was Pro 14, and do you remember they used to do, obviously they used to do the festive derbies, and what they done was they mixed up the festive derbies so that Glasgow played Edinburgh and then played the Italian side at New Year. And it was, they were saying it's that the Scottish Italian rivalry. It's like, no, it's just because we've both got two teams in the league. Come on, like, don't try and kid us. But yes, we are playing for the Scottish Italian Shield, and it has sparked multiple debates online as to what this should be called.
I think this only works if you're in a very in a small area. But the Jacopazzi's Cup. Anyone's had Jacopazzi's ice cream in IMOF will know.
Cup. I was a big fan of the Cup de Capaldi. I thought that kind of worked quite well because, you know, it's embracing everything that's going on here. So I thought that was quite good.
The Tommaso Allen Cup, you know, the Tommy Allen Cup.
He's now back
in England, I suppose. But
fair play to Tommy Boy. He was bloody brilliant at the weekend.
He was good. He was very
good. Yeah, I tell you, one of my absolute heroes growing up, Pasquale Bruno, played for Hearts, centre midfield, the animal. The Pasquale Bruno throw the Pasquale Bruno shield.
Oh, there you go. So, I mean, anyone from the United Rugby Fighting Championship that's watching this and wants to take our ideas for the cup name, then please give us. I hope it is actually a cup as well. I hope there's like an actual shield that the guys get to hold up. By guys, yeah. I mean Glasgow.
Shall we do the teams first? Then we'll talk. We can talk about the competition as a whole. So, I don't know. I don't know how to do this. To be fair, John, you've been naughty because you've had a dig at Craig. So I'm going to take the dad approach to this. Craig, let's start with Edinburgh. Have there been many incomings into Edinburgh this season? As many as you'd like?
For me, you know, I think that for me the biggest signing has been Mike Blair.
Yeah.
I think that's been our biggest signing. I'm excited by that. Obviously the second coming of Ben Vellacott has been a fantastic signing as well, and he proved himself on the weekend, got player of the match, and you know, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets along. Immelman is definitely going to de-seat. I'm going to say this, it's heresy, I know, but Kinghorn has got a job on his hand with Immelman. Yep. Because Immelman is, you know, you thought Blair Kinghorn was a big lad. This boy is massive. And at fullback, he seemed to play very, very well. I think we've got it just about right. We've signed players that are a little bit under the radar, and people are saying, you know, for example, James Lang, people are, you know, he's very much a Marmite player. Some people have said why have we signed him? He's not been very good in a Scotland shirt, but you know, he's not been very good in a Harlequin shirt. But actually, I think he should shine in an Edinburgh shirt. Vellacott, again, people are fairly hard on him as well. So I think
you got to look like James Lang has not been bad in a Scotland shirt, right? He's not been great. He's not like set the heather afire. And do you know who else didn't for the first few games? Chris Harris.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's the kind of thing I see with James. Lang. I think James Lang is he's not really done much wrong in a Scotland shirt. He hasn't been phenomenal, but to play international rugby and not put a foot wrong and do okay.
Yeah.
Is a pretty high standard. You found one in national rugby. I think Ben Vellacott as well. You've got to bear in mind, this is a guy who Eddie Jones wanted to play for England, and like that or not, England are a bigger draw for a player than Scotland. I know that's probably heresy to say that on a Scottish rugby podcast,
easy cap just now though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think for me, I think. You know, with Blair coming in, Vellacott coming in, The logjam for us, I would say, will probably be at 10. And we need to see where we're going to be with 10. I saw, obviously, Kinghorn, I think, was playing 10 at the weekend, or had a pop at it anyway, and maybe that's the way they're looking at it. For me, you know, Mark Bennett is just, he's yet to convince me. I think when he was with Matt Scott, he was phenomenal, but he's missing that centre partnership. And if James Lang is the answer, then great. But you also have to remember, you know, we may be fairly quiet. We may have been fairly quiet on the signings, but if you look at some of the signings we've brought in, but also where Edinburgh was and who we have. You know, I'm not going to get through this podcast without mentioning Pierre Schumann. We've got, three phenomenal hookers. McBurnley, I think, will grow. I think we've got McInally and we've got Dave Cherry, who are proving themselves very, very good. We've got, a fairly big engine room in with Gilchrist and. In our second rows, we're fairly balanced. We've got the back row. Everybody would pay money for. So if you got the option for having either Hamish Watson or Jamie Ritchie, you'd take someone's arm off.
I tell you what, John, back row, like genuinely, and I know I try to be impartial and slag off both Glasgow and Edinburgh. That's how I show my impartiality, but. On paper, a back row of Richie Watson and Mata, anybody in France, England,
yes,
anywhere else in the world would pay through the nose for that back row.
They would, but
that's a 300. That's a
that's a box office.
That's a 750 grand a year every per player back row. That is a big money in France.
It's a good back row. But I think, again, the difference is how good are they in comparison to the opposition? And we'll come on to Glasgow in a minute, but I totally accept that your back row is probably better, but I don't think it's as much better as we're thinking.
But I think for me, and this is, and we'll come on to this. I think for me, Edinburgh's game, I think the South African teams pose a massive risk to the Scottish teams this season. But it's like nothing that they've ever come across. I think the positive is that aside from one weekend so far, the URC is not going to clash with international windows, which is a good move, which means your players are available.
Yeah.
For Edinburgh, that back row is as good as anything that the South African teams will throw at them. The rest of the Edinburgh squad, I think, there'll be some frights along the way, and we'll see it'll sort out the men from the boys. But the Edinburgh back row, I think, is up there with anything the South Africans have got.
You also have to think about, are there going to be times, are they going to bring Khaleesi along with them? Is he going to make the journey? And it's the same with the whole Sexton question. Is Sexton going to actually go to South Africa to play down in South Africa? Will he travel? Those are the question marks. Because I'm really excited to go and watch the Sharks play at the ERS. The problem I have with that is I don't want to get all excited and go down and then the named players are still sitting in South Africa and the rest of and that's a big question that's going to be.
Yeah, I think we'll come on to that in a minute.
Yeah,
because that's a wider question. Let's go to Glasgow then, John. John, Glasgow, a decent bit of business. I suppose a lot of the players kind of came in towards the end of last season, really. I mean, you nabbed a couple of Edinburgh boys, which is Glasgow's one. That's what always happens. Oh! You take a couple of Edinburgh boys, you turn them around, you make them slightly better.
Exactly. That's our game, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, no, Glasgow have recruited well. It's felt like the most balanced recruitment cycle we've had in quite some time.
Yeah, Duncan Weir was an absolute steal. Oh, fantastic steal.
You know fine well I'm not a Duncan Weir fan, so don't even start, son. That was a panic buy. Ross Thompson, for me, is a much better player. I think Ross Thompson will Donkey Weir will probably be getting Skelfs for a wee bit.
Who's the Argentinian boy you've got at 10 as well?
Miotti, who has looked behind a scrabbling Argentine pack, has looked early Finn, let's say. That would be my best description of it.
Mad as a bag of snakes.
Oh, yeah. Just as liable to skin the back row, chip and chase, and then score under the post as he has to throw an intercept and put his team 80 behind their own post. So, yeah. But, again, potential. He's a very talented footballer. He does look like a decent signing. Concern would be, I think he's more of an idea for next season, actually. Because it's going to take time with the Argentinian boys in particular, because they're off with Argentina just now for the Rugby Championship. You're coming in late, you're then looking at kind of a pre-season, mid-season. You're probably talking Christmas before these guys are even kind of up to speed. So I wouldn't worry too. And actually, it's a concern for me because I think that you've got Sebastian Cancellieri, who's come in the wing, and he looks an absolute prospect as well. And
isn't a Cancellieri the guy that is that the name for a mafia fixer?
I hope so.
Cancellieri, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So this is a Cancellieri, not a Consellieri. but I mean, I think yeah, you're absolutely right. Glasgow's backs now. Tuipulotu looks very good in the centre as well. There's a lot of pace in that back, the backs now, which maybe towards the end of kind of your Tommy Seymour, Nico Matulawu era, the pace had gone. But you know, there was a rugby brain there, but there's nothing that kind of gets past pure pace in the backs, is there really? That's what you want them there for.
I think that probably there was a period, and I think one thing that I think the Embra suffered when the tens were away on Scotland duty. I think Glasgow struggled since Finn's gone to plug that gap. But now you've got Ross Thompson at Glasgow. Yep. Now that Embra seem to have at least two, if not three, reasonable prospects at 10 in Yakko, Charlie Sevier and Blair Kingholm, he's not done bad at 10, let's face it, Craig. That's for me, kind of has been the missing link for the two pro teams over the past two seasons, and both of them seem to have plugged that gap and then some.
Yeah, I think you know, Savala. I'm looking forward to seeing a bit more out of him. I think he's going to need the time. I think it's the same. I'm worried he's going to drop into the same way that Charlie Shield went, and you know he's only getting a small amount of time on the field, and then he tries to overplay to try and make a point. So my I would like to see him start a few of the games, and that's the only thing that's kind of missing, is the fact that they're not get those games that all the internationals were away playing in the autumn, etc. You could then bring on your young lads and give them a full 80 minutes. Now, it was horrendous rugby, but it gave them match, you know, gameplay and match time. So it'll be interesting to see how it works. But no, I agree with John. I think for Glasgow have had their, mind you, we had a poor season, but they had their poorer season last year. And they're starting to build. I always go working 3 years cycles. And I think Edinburgh are going to be the same. They're going to take 3 years. This will be our start with Mike Blair starting to change a few bits and pieces and working away and seeing what players are going to be the right thing. He'll be out signing people next season, you know, because there'll be a certain amount of people move out because they don't fit in with Mike Blair's way as well. And so you'll get this year that will be, we'll see where we are. You'll see an improvement, I hope. And then we'll hopefully build from there.
Yeah.
Can we touch on back row before we
go? Let's go, because I want to do the last kind of like 5 minutes on the competition as a whole, and then we'll continue that in the hands in the ruck section.
No worries. So Glasgow's back row. Glasgow have signed well, actually. Obviously, at the tail end of last season, Glasgow brought in Rory Darge. who was utterly manor born to that Glasgow shirt, and made for me that was why Cockerill was fired. That's why he should have been fired. That was a ridiculous decision for me.
But it wasn't. No, the problem. But Ember was stacked in the back row, right? And that's the problem that they had. Actually, I think Glasgow weren't. And that it was a way of redressing the balance. I mean, the more you've got, if you're trying to get past Hamish Watson and Jamie Ritchie, who are, let's face it, the two best back rows in Scottish rugby right now, you're not going to get game. Rory Darge was not going to get the same game time as he's going to get at Glasgow. Glasgow, to a certain extent, Glasgow needed somebody like Rory Darge, and Rory Darge needed Glasgow.
Yeah,
I don't think that's Cockerill's fault.
To a certain point. Because Glasgow did have Tom Gordon tearing up trees at the time when he
signed. But Rory Darge and Tom Gordon together, I mean.
But they'll not play together. That's the thing. They won't play together.
Why
because
not?
You've got
Why
Jack Dempsey, an Australian international, who is an absolute ball-carrying machine, who'll be playing six. And then Darge will be at seven, or Gordon will be at seven. They're both.
Yeah, it's that whole thing of having two sevens. Yeah, you can't.
Dempsey will play eight.
Dempsey could potentially play it, but then you've got Matt Fagerson, who definitely needs more game time and is continuing to grow as an international talent. So it's balancing your resources. But I think Dempsey for me is the key now, because he comes in and he is that six that we've not had. Glasgow have also been trying some of the second rows at six during the summer, with a view to potentially mitigating the wonderful decision by World Rugby with the 50-22. So we've been looking at using second rows in the back row as another line-out option. So Cummings has played at six, and Kieran McDonald played at six. That's an interesting call. He's a big lad to be running about at six. But Cummings, I wouldn't be surprised if we use Cummings at six more this season when Dempsey isn't. Well, I would expect them to interchange more, but Darge and Gordon for me are both out and out sevens, and they'll be competing for that shirt. I don't think Glasgow are going to play the two sevens. As much as I love that style of rugby, I think it's great, but I don't think they'll play that way.
For me, the difference is between, and then we talk about the difference between the back rows. For me, the difference is Ember have a world class back row that can compete with the South African teams. Glasgow potentially have a world class back row, but it's a Schrodinger's cat of a back row, because we don't know how well it can combine and how well it can play together until it starts doing it.
You're right.
But 100%, I think those players that we've all mentioned, the Matt Fagersons, the Tom Gordons, the Rory Darges, the Jack Dempseys, you know, the proof will be in the pudding of how it goes. But on paper, they have the potential to be world class. I think the difference is that the three that are at Edinburgh that would start every game if they're fit are provably world class. And that's the difference.
And I don't disagree in the slightest with that. All I'm saying is I don't think the gap is as big as we're maybe suggesting it is.
And it probably isn't. And it's just a case of game time and people getting time under the belts and getting games. I wanted to talk about the competition and the way the United Rugby Championship's going. What I think we'll do, because we're over an hour now, we're going to take that into hands in the ruck. What we might do is we might touch on that next week after the first round within the main podcast. We'll come back to some of those talking points for the main pod. What we'll do, though, is we'll say goodbye to everybody. Thank you very much for listening to everybody on the main, on the regular podcast. What we're going to do now is we're going to have a little two-minute break, comfort break. That's why we say goodbye. If you are a patron, you can carry on listening to us on our super secret Facebook page. There's normally a kind of like couple of minutes while we go and get ourselves sorted and come back for the discussion. But for the moment, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from John and Craig.
Bye.
Bye, folks.